This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Welcome to the Bite Size Business Breakfast Podcast, the best bits from the show on Wednesday, June the 12th. Jay Powell is giving his latest thoughts on the American economy, interest rate hikes and more a little later on today. So there was plenty of predictions doing the rounds, being flung around on the show a little earlier on. So big focus on what he might say or decide a little later on from some of our analysts. Talking of analysts, also a big chat about all things AI. In fact, just about everyone on the show weighed in one way or another on the AI debate. And it couldn't have come at a better time, given the new initiatives that were launched by the Dubai government and authorities here in Dubai overnight. Also joining us was the World Bank's Deputy Chief Economist and Director of Prospects Group, Ayhan Kose, who spoke to Richard a little earlier on. Not the greatest of outlooks globally from the World Bank, but you know what? UAE and the GCC do pretty well in the latest report. It was, in fact, a morning of reports, one from the World Bank, one also from Gallup about employee engagement. We had Tanvi Ahluwalia, the Associate Principal Partner Group from Gallup, join us live in studio to tell us a bit about a brand new report which actually went live this morning, talking about how employees are engaged at work, workplaces in the UAE changing. But the different sort of science behind that at the moment, how that whole landscape is changing. And then another report for you to make up a trio of reports. We had Miriam Burt join us, Managing VP Analyst at Gartner. Gartner have done their IT spend report. It was a bit of a discrepancy here. Spend has gone up, but annual growth has come down in the IT sector. So that didn't really make sense until we spoke to Miriam, of course, who explained it very clearly to us. And guess what was one of the reasons? It was our preparedness or lack of therein for all things AI. That's all right here on the Bite Size Business Breakfast Podcast. Data, Dini, coming out of the US a little later on today and over the course of the next couple of days. Data that could have an impact.
Yeah, big day in the United States. We're counting down now, about 13 hours until we hear from the Federal Reserve. Three things we're looking out for. What are they going to do with interest rates? Well, we kind of know that. They're going to keep them on hold. But there's going to be a new dot plot. That's predictions about future interest rate cuts from the various members of the policy committee. And we're going to hear from Jay Powell, the head of the Fed, his press conference after the announcement. We asked Ed Bell, Senior Director, Market Economics, Emirates NBD, what will you be looking out for tonight?
What I'd like to hear from Fed Chair Jerome Powell tonight is how they're going to explain the Fed wanting to begin cutting rates ahead of the U.S. economy hitting their own inflation targets at 2%. There seems to be a lot of hope that they can cut rates while inflation is on the way down, rather than letting it get there and then beginning to ease policy. Back in 2020, the Fed adopted an average inflation targeting program, something that really kind of seems lost in time now. But the issue then was, how do you actually get inflation higher, as it had been running quite low? So the assumption was that if inflation was too low, you would let it run too hot for some time to compensate in order to get this average inflation level. But now we're in the opposite situation, so the argument should hold that we should really be below the 2% level for a long time, given that inflation has been so elevated. In that case, it really looks tough to me for the Fed to be in a position where it wants to provide easier monetary policy for the U.S. economy just by the own measures it set itself.
That's Ed Bell of Emirates NBD. So we'll bring you those comments from Jay Powell tomorrow morning on the Business Breakfast from 6. We'll get Ed's analysis as well. Do you know who we've also got in the studio tomorrow who's going to be looking at that? John Defterios.
Of course, yeah.
Veteran CNN anchor. He's now left CNN, but he's still a journalist, media type, covering these issues. John is brilliant. He's going to be joining us in the studio for an extended interview tomorrow, giving us his take on some of the big stories. So the Fed overnight, we've got the G7 meeting in Italy to look forward to, local stories as well. He's lived in this region for a long time now. And also his halftime report on the local and global economy, because we're close to the middle of 2024, just before Eid al-Adha. John's here tomorrow morning, I think between about 7 and 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. But he's a great guy, John. Looking forward to that.
Yeah, it'd be good to catch up again. Big focus on all things AI for us this morning. Sheikh Hamdan bin Mohammed, Crown Prince of Dubai, launching a roadmap to help attract top companies and talent in artificial intelligence to Dubai. The AI roadmap aims to enhance the overall quality of life in the Emirate by boosting the adoption of AI. That has been the focus of many of our headlines today. UAE's AI minister saying that artificial intelligence is a necessity, not a luxury, for countries around the world. Also went on to joke that the last two letters of the Emirate are AI. No coincidence, it's meant to be, said Omar Al-Alama, who was speaking at the event at Museum of the Future yesterday.
We want to ensure within our strategy and within our universal blueprint that the private sector will choose Dubai to invest in talent, it will choose Dubai to invest in deployment, and it will choose Dubai to ensure that artificial intelligence is global in nature, built out of the city.
AI to the fore. In fact, AI has been a subject on all of our interviews today, none more so than the first of the day. We kicked off with the team from Gartner. Miriam Burt joined us live in studio. IT spending in the MENA region forecast to total over $193 billion in 2024. That's an increase of 5.2% from the previous year, according to the latest forecast by Gartner. So big spend. However, annual growth going down when it comes to IT in the region. How is that the case? A question we put to Miriam. And guess what? AI playing its part.
We are not ready and prepared for the onslaught of AI and JI and particularly Gen AI right now. What we're doing is doing the preparedness, the business readiness, making sure we have enough compute facilities, making sure we have good talent that will help us to make the most of Gen AI and AI, making sure that we can know how to bring these things together. And then there's a thing that has actually come about in the last couple of years. I think we've all heard this: data monetization. What do we do with all this data that's coming in? At the moment, for generative AI, we're still at base camp. And we need to be careful, because there are some things that are not good for generative AI. I would say put on your actual intelligence, your smarts, when you're looking at AI.
Are the thoughts of Miriam there? We've also been talking satellites this morning, Dini.
We have, because the space economy is a big deal here in the UAE. Yarsat, well-established satellite company based down the road in Abu Dhabi, they've just done a deal with Airbus. They're paying Airbus billion dirhams to build a couple of satellites. Issa Al-Shamsi joined us, General Manager at Yarsat for Government Solutions. And of course, this comes ahead of Yarsat's merger with Bayonet, which is happening imminently. It's all been approved and done and dusted to create a super space company here in the UAE. But it was the Airbus deal we wanted to talk about. So we said to Issa, you've done this deal with Airbus. They're going to build you two satellites. Tell us more.
We signed an agreement with Airbus. The aim of this agreement to build and launch two new advanced satellites. We call them Alia 4 and Alia 5. The total cost of Alia 4 and Alia 5 program is estimated at approximately 4 billion dirhams, including the satellites, ground operation infrastructure, launch arrangements, and insurance. The new contract reflects our efforts to implement Yarsat's internal growth strategy, which focuses on modernizing our fleets of satellites through new generation satellites, which expands the scope of the coverage and allows us to enter into new businesses and markets based on the advanced space technology.
Issa Al-Shamsi there of Yarsat.
Bit of breaking news for you since we've been on air. Confirmation there in that earlier on this week, BlackRock have appointed a new boss for the region. They've hired Mohammed Al-Fahim as their managing director and head of the UAE to look after business in the country, not just here in the UAE, but also Oman and Bahrain. Al-Fahim, previously with Goldman Sachs, helped establish the Wall Street Bank's office in Abu Dhabi, home to three sovereign wealth funds, of course, Adya Mubadala and ADQ. So Mohammed Al-Fahim to lead all aspects of BlackRock's client business to help deliver a diversified platform of investment solutions. Big job.
It is a big job. Yeah, BlackRock's a massive organisation. And it's interesting, BlackRock making headlines this morning on Bloomberg because their global CEO, Larry Fink, one of the world's richest people, is going to be in Italy this week. G7 meeting starts tomorrow. And you've got your usual world leaders. Joe Biden's going to be there as well. Giorgia Meloni, of course, from Italy, Prime Minister, is going to be hosting the event. But they've invited a couple of big business leaders as well because they want some money at the table. So Larry Fink is going to be there from BlackRock, and Satya Nadella of Microsoft is going to be there as well. They're gathering in Puglia tomorrow, Tom. Why did we not get the gig to cover that one in Puglia?
Wouldn't that have been perfect, eh? For the crowds descend on quaint Italy over the summer months, etc. Yeah. Schengen visa didn't come through in time, did it?
This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Right, let's get more on that World Bank report. So I was lucky to speak earlier on this morning with Ayhan Kosei, who's the World Bank's Deputy Chief Economist and Director of the Prospects Group. He was in Washington, D.C., where the World Bank is based. I spoke to him from here in Dubai. And I asked him, first of all, for the global take on that report. The global economy still well below pre-pandemic levels.
So 2.6% to be celebrated. 60% of countries still are going to experience weaker growth over the next 2 years than what they had on average in the decade prior to the pandemic. Those countries account for 80% of global GDP, and they are home to 80% of global population. There are multiple risks. Trade is still weak, investment is still weak, and geopolitical tensions are on the rise, and there are multiple conflicts around the world.
So if we look at some of the things that are holding the global economy back, particularly in less developed countries, you talk about monetary policy or high interest rates. Of course, we've got a Fed meeting later tonight. We're recording this Tuesday night in the US, Wednesday morning in the United Arab Emirates. What impact is that having? Just explain how that is working. And what do you see with interest rates going forward?
So when you look at the levels of interest rates this year and for the next 2 years, they are two times higher than what we saw over the period on average from 2000 to 2019. Those higher rates obviously taking a toll, especially when you look at countries with weak credit ratings, elevated debt levels, and these are most of the time poorer countries, lower middle income countries. They lost access to global financial markets. They are unable to, you know, easily roll over their currencies, and their growth prospects look much weaker than, you know, other emerging developing economies with weaker, with better credit ratings. So all in all, higher interest rates have been taking a toll, and if they are with us for the foreseeable future, we will see the impact of those higher rates on lower income countries.
If we look at the politics around the world, and your report talks about protectionism as being one of the things that's putting a brake on economic growth. So we can't ignore the politics. Elections around the world at the moment, India, the United States, the two biggies this year, but many, many others as well. To what extent do you factor that into your reports and to your forecasts?
So the one of the big issue in this major election year, given that we have, you know, a number of large economies are going on elections, seeing elections, we looked at trade policy uncertainty in these years. And what we found is that trade policy uncertainty has reached unprecedented levels in a major election year when we compare this year with previous election years since 2000. So, and of course, with elevated trade policy uncertainty, you have also a very large number of trade restrictions imposed. And the consequences of, you know, these protectionist policies, we are going through a period when you look at the trade growth in this decade. On average, we have the weakest half-decade trade growth we have seen since the early 1990s. So trade growth is already weak. Because of policy uncertainty, we are worried about going forward. Trade is going to lose momentum with significant implications for economic growth, for job creation, of course, for poverty reduction as well.
If we look at the Middle East, and your report does in some detail, look, business is booming here in Dubai, where I am at the moment. The UAE is doing really well. Saudi Arabia is doing really well. But Of course, no one is ignoring the situation in the north of the region, particularly in Gaza itself, but also the neighboring economies there. How do you characterize this region?
The region is, you know, in a sense, those they have basically natural resources. Those countries are having, you know, relatively better times. And though they do not have these natural resources, still struggling. In the context of West Bank and Gaza, we are expecting another year of very serious contraction. Of course, the lives and livelihoods being affected by the conflict in the region and the consequences of this conflict when it comes to, you know, broader problems in the region and how those problems manifest themselves when you look at commodity markets, when you look at overall growth prospects. Yes, you are right. United Arab Emirates is going to deliver growth around 4% this year, another 4% next year. But some parts of the region are really in dire state.
A final quick word on artificial intelligence, if I may. So much hype around the world from investors and hands up from journalists like me as well. We had one of the world's first AI ministers, Omar Al-Alama. Just yesterday, he was speaking here in Dubai saying AI is a necessity for governments around the world, not a luxury. At the World Bank, as an economist, you strip out the hype and look at the reality. Does AI really have a significant role to play, particularly in low-income countries? And if so, how do we make AI inclusive for poor countries, not just rich countries like America or the Emirates?
So there is no question there are going to be benefits, especially in the context of productivity improvements with these, you know, new technologies, including generative AI. And, you know, the consequences when it comes to doing business. And that's true in the context of public space and how governments are going to conduct their business and basically improve the service delivery. We see large opportunities. But as you said, whatever we do in the context of AI, we need to make sure it is inclusive. And that boils down to, Richard, you know, making sure we have an educated, well-prepared labor force. This is an important issue in the Middle East and North Africa, as you know well, still bringing a number of you know, new entrants to global labor markets. If they are educated well, if they have the kind of the access to services they need, of course, they are able to utilize these technologies and they will have the opportunity to make a big jump. And we are optimistic about that.
The thoughts of Ayhan Kosei, the World Bank's Deputy Chief Economist, speaking to me a short while ago from Washington, D.C. That World Bank report is out today.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-sized Business Breakfast.
Right, let's talk about employee engagement in the workplace because a new study from Gallup is out and it's a massive study. Almost 250,000 people around the globe. Delighted to be joined in the studio to reveal the findings now by Tanvi Ahluwalia, Associate Principal with Gallup here in Dubai. Morning, Tanvi.
Good morning, Richard.
Right, so this is a closely guarded secret. It's out, it's actually only out in about an hour's time, midnight Eastern time in the United States. But you can reveal the results here on air. And the headline for me is that employee engagement in the workplace has stagnated over the past year. It's not got any worse, but it certainly hasn't got any better. Tell us more.
Absolutely, Richard. You got that right. The global numbers have stagnated. It's the same number of 23% being engaged globally. That's about one in four. But let me give you some perspective of where we are in the region. Looking at the UAE, we see steady increase in growth here where the news is good, where 29% people are engaged, which means that's about one in three. The MENA region, unfortunately, has seen a dip of about 2%, which goes to 14%. But of course, while we say that the UAE is surely on a growth trajectory, doing better than a lot of countries across the globe, there is still massive potential, even here in the UAE, where two in three employees are still not in the engaged category.
Okay, why do we care? There'll be people going, who cares if staff are engaged in the workplace or not? They're paid to do a job, turn up, do your job, you get paid to do it, engagement be damned.
I love that question. Why employee engagement? You know, it really is so important to understand that this initiative, it impacts business performance. If you have engaged employees at work, it means you're meeting their workplace needs, you're making them more productive. And at the end of the day, that will impact business parameters, whether it's you're looking at productivity, profitability, absenteeism, anything that's important for you as an organization. If your employees are engaged, it will increase your probability of getting that high performance.
What's the data to back that up? Because Gallup, you're a data company. Mm-hmm. Intuitively, I agree with you. Mm-hmm. Okay, I get it. I buy into the whole. I'm not a skeptic about employee engagement. I believe it. But what does the data tell us about that link between productivity and a causal link between increased productivity being a function of increased engagement?
I love that. I've been with Gallup 12 years and it's my favorite question. Gallup runs a study called meta-analysis, which is the largest study of its kind. It's a longitudinal study which talks about the impact of engagement on business numbers. And what it really does is it helps quantify the needs of employees. Something as basic as what Tom was saying in the previous segment, to say he had to ruffle his house because he couldn't find a piece of paper, because that's freeing him from unnecessary stress. Even these little things, moving to, you know, listening opinions count, to growth and development, all of these have an impact. And we as Gallup measure that over the years, over decades, to then say, how is that engagement of employees globally, not just in one region, but across the globe, how organizations, government and private sector are having that impact on their business numbers.
And that link, is there evidence to support that link between profits and productivity, things that shareholders care about, bosses care about, and employee engagement as an input to help us hit those numbers?
Absolutely. Your engaged employees will lead to your engaged customers, and which that in turn will lead to higher productivity. And then, of course, managing that better will lead to higher profits, which then leads to shareholder value.
Okay, but does employee engagement come at a cost? If we take for the sake of argument that there is a payback to employers and shareholders of increased engagement, not just a nice to have, but it boosts your numbers. What does it cost to have an engaged workforce? What kind of things do you have to put in place to boost the engagement scores of your workforce?
Absolutely. The long answer short would that be is focus on your manager, Richard. When it comes to engagement, 70% of variance for any employee is really driven by their manager. So help equip your managers to make a transition from being a boss who gives directions to being a coach. And that takes effort. That takes development.
So that's the quick win.
That is the quick win.
It's not about having a snooker table in the office or anything like that. It's managers.
Absolutely. Snooker table, all of these, good to have satisfaction. But when it comes to engagement, it's a business imperative. And what shows in our data as well is to see that in the UAE, the job market is so competitive. So if you don't focus on investing in your managers and your employees, we're asked a question to say, how many people, is it a good time to look for a job? That's a 10% increase this year in the report. 7 in 10 employees say that, yes, it's a good time to look for a job. And out of that, 4 in 10 employees say they're actively seeking out. So what does that mean? How do managers retain their top talent and their top performers?
Well, because globally, it's a thing, isn't it? Well, two things. Firstly, most managers get promoted because they're good at their job.
Yeah.
They don't get trained in being a manager. They just have to figure it out on the job, because investment in management training globally and here in the UAE is quite low. And secondly, there's the Peter principle, isn't there? Mm. That everybody gets promoted to one level above the level to which they are competent, because you keep getting promoted until you get to a job where you're not very good, and then you stop and you hit a ceiling. That is the Peter principle. How do we... So managers aren't very good often at managing. How do we fix that without sending them all to Harvard?
I love that. Gallup, we are data nerds at Gallup, and the study that we've done across the globe, that only 2 in 10 people have the managerial talent to be great managers. And you're right, when somebody's doing well at their job, they're necessarily or most likely promoted to their next level, which doesn't necessarily mean that they have the people skills.
2 in 10 have managerial skills.
Have managerial skills, and 1 in 10 can be coached to become even better. But then that doesn't mean we fire our workforce, do we? We, of course, can look at ways to develop talent in terms of looking at what can you do to make managers better at managing people. There are skills that can be developed. The ones with the high talent, if they're measured, Gallup, of course, supports in that to help you hire and train and select the right managers. But then if you're already looking at your existing workforce, let's give them the tools and the skills to become better at managing people.
Lots of messages in on this. Ali's written in. Thanks very much indeed. He's got a tip, a good book on this.
Okay.
He says, get the book by Vinit Nair, which is Employees First, Customers Second, Turning Conventional Management Upside Down. Thanks very much indeed, Ali. Abdul Salam says, some companies are taking the engagement score and just making it a KPI on the scorecard and a box-ticking exercise. Do you agree with Abdul Salam?
That's a great point. And that's one of the reasons, you're absolutely right, what can't be measured can't be managed is what something is very important to know. We wouldn't want just the scores to be a part of the KPI, but really work being done to drive engagement on the ground. How do you look at meeting employee needs of their opinions count, helping them build trusting relationships, focusing on their growth, on their development, freeing them from unnecessary stress, and not just making it, like you said, get a snooker table, get a KPI, and that's where it ends. It's a lot more work for leaders and managers.
Okay, finally, Tanvi, this is a global study. UAE, yes, a little bit above the global average, best in the MENA region. Who's the best in the world for employee engagement? Which countries?
Yes, some of the countries that have done really well this year, we see a high increase in India. We're seeing the US also doing at about 33%. We've seen some good scores. Unfortunately, the European region is significantly low. They're the lowest region in our database when it comes to engagement.
Who's top of the pops? Because the Scandinavians normally do well in surveys like this. Ten seconds?
Yes. They're
who's top?
Yes. So we're seeing between the Scandinavian countries, we're seeing overall growth. We're seeing the average on them. I wouldn't be able to point towards the exact
country. No
worries, Tanvi.
Yes. We'll leave it there. We're out of time. Tanvi Ahluwalia from Gallup. Appreciate your time.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast,
where we are diving into a number of reports throughout the morning, and who better to start with than our friends at Gartner. They've got their latest IT spend report out, which shows that there is significant investment into the IT sector. Miriam Burt is the Managing VP Analyst at Gartner, joining us live in studio this morning. Miriam, thanks so much indeed for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
IT spending in the MENA region forecast to total $193.7 billion in 2024. Is that a significant increase?
Well, if you go back, let's go back to 2020, because we can see the sort of trend. The spend then was something like $165 billion and a 2.4% to 2.5% growth at that point. Between then and now, it's kind of oscillated a bit. You know, we had a 4.5% hike in 2021 because that was due to the pent-up spend coming off the back of COVID. And then as we've come towards 2024, yes, we can actually see some growth in the IT spend, largely due to the escalation of hype on AI and particularly Gen AI. There are lots of other things going on, but that's one of the kind of top lines.
And that's what's driving this investment moving forward at the moment.
Well, there are other things driving the investment as well. So if we let's just look at the spend, 5% growth, we really split that up into various categories. So let's look at the down first, because there are some nuances in there, some downs and some ups. If we look at the spend on data center systems, and here we have to be really careful because I'm not talking about data centers.
Yeah.
Data centers themselves, investment is very huge because we see lots of the global hyperscalers in the market, AWS, Google, Microsoft, but also people like Huawei and Ali coming into the market, bringing in these huge infrastructure projects via the data centers. And also being responsible because they're spending on the greening of them. So big spend up there. But if you look at the systems, and when we talk about the systems, we talk about things like the storage, the servers, the networks and those things. We see that there's a slight down in the storage. And this is because we're expecting huge amounts of data to come in on the back of AI and Gen AI. And they need to be stored flexibly. So they're moving away from hardware-based storage, which are the external controller-based storages, and going towards something what we call software-defined storage, where the hardware and the software are decoupled. So you can sort of upgrade, you can have that flexibility to add more, take away more if you need that kind of scalability without having to spend more on proprietary hardware. So that's where that kind of down is coming from. If you look at the device sector, for example, again, we have a bit of a down. That's down 4.5%. And you might say, well, that's interesting because that's actually being driven. Why is that the case when we see a lot of mobile smartphone penetration, for example, in this region?
Yeah.
And that is because we see uneven spend in the region. I have to say that the MENA forecast spans a lot of areas. We have Israel, we have Turkey, we have obviously Saudi and the GCC, we have some North African countries. So there's kind of an uneven spend. And we see, for example, notably shipments of mobile phones into Israel is down about 20%. Like up in Saudi, up in UAE, slightly down in Kuwait and Qatar. So that kind of balances out. We're also coming on the back of receding inflation. And so, but even then, some of those effects are lingering because people are hanging on to their smartphones and don't want to quite part with them as yet. So that's a down on the devices. The biggest spend we're actually seeing in two areas, that's the software side of things and the IT services sides of things, the very big spend. And that's because we see enterprises moving more and more towards cloud. We definitely see that migration. They're certainly slightly behind what we might see in other regions, but in this region, that's what's happening. They're moving towards cloud. Add on to that the investment spend in IoT, the investment spend in automation, plus robotics, for example, and of course, AI, Gen AI. All these things, I think enterprises are understanding that they need to converge. Mm. You can't actually say, you know, what am I going to do for my next Gen AI or AI project? It doesn't work like that. It's more, how can I create services to make sure we're creating value for our customers? That's the question. And then on the operational side, how can I cut costs? And then you start to think about how can I string these technologies together to help me do that?
I think you've partly answered my next question, which is a lot of people were going, hang on, okay, so we are seeing more spend, more budget going into IT, but we're seeing slower annual growth. Now, you've given a couple of reasons there, but there seems to be a little bit of an imbalance there, especially given that we're being led to believe that generative AI and AI is going to make us more efficient moving forward?
Yes, really good question. And that is because we are not ready and prepared for the onslaught of AI and AI and particularly Gen AI right now. What we're doing is doing the preparedness, the business readiness, making sure we have enough compute facilities. So, for example, everyone's heard about what's happened with NVIDIA, yeah, in the hardware side of it. Making sure we have good talent that will help us to make the most of Gen AI and AI. Making sure that we can know how to bring these things together. And then there's a thing that has actually come about in the last couple of years. I think we've all heard this, data monetization. What do we do with all this data that's coming in? At the moment for generative AI, we're still at base camp, right? And we need to be careful because there are some things that are not good for generative AI. What not to use generative AI for? So we can use generative AI for creating marketing content, for example, because it's basically a content creation tool. And it is only one part of AI. AI has got lots of other parts. How do you simulate things? You know, how do you optimize things? Mm. How do you generate content? That's only one small slice of it, but it's actually been super hyped. So what we need to do is get back to basics, understand the place of Gen AI within the whole AI panoply of technologies, techniques, and practices that we have, and then figure out how Gen AI and AI together will help us.
Yeah.
So I mentioned, you know, some of the basic use case, which would be creating marketing content, for example. But if you go to the other end of the scale, which is, oh, you know, people say you can use Gen AI for prediction. No, you can't. Yeah. Not right now. We don't have that confidence in the data. We don't have the confidence, very importantly, in the security of the data. So you've just heard Apple Intelligence, you know, the AI thing. I would say put on your actual intelligence, your smarts, when you're looking at AI.
Quote of the day already. First hour of the show. Love that.
I told you she was good before she walked in. I wasn't wrong, was I?
Quote of the day. Right. That the old bar has been raised for every other guest afterwards. Miriam, absolutely great to see you. Thanks so much indeed joining us. Thanks for the report and thanks for joining us nice and early this morning. Thanks to Miriam Burt, the Managing VP Analyst of Gartner.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com. You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to DubaiEye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.